of transgender people unless and until they're faced with incarceration. And so Chelsea Manning has been recognized as female by the government, but they continue to impose upon her both the male housing facility in the form of the disciplinary barracks at Leavenworth, but they're also forcing her to maintain her male the male hair length standards and grooming standards. And that is something that we're fighting in court. And the perils and the damages of being forced to be punished through the denial of your core identity is something that has led to her depression. It's imperiled her health, and it's something that many transgender people across the country are facing on a daily basis.
Very quickly, we have 30 seconds. Talk about HB2 and the hearing this week.
So in North Carolina, the ACLU and Lambda Legal are headed to trial against North Carolina's anti-trans law. We had our first hearing this week down in North Carolina. It is going to be an ongoing fight to take down that law and other anti-trans laws. And we're going to be doing that in the context in which we know that so many trans women of color are being murdered on the streets. And we have a responsibility to fight back against all of the ways our communities continue to be targeted and killed in prisons, by laws, and by people on the streets.
Chase, we're going to continue this interview right after the show, and we're going to post it online at democracynow.org. Chase Stranger, staff attorney at the ACLU, representing Chelsea Manning in a lawsuit against the Pentagon. That does it for our broadcast, Democracy Now!, produced by Mike Burke, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Dina Guzder, Sam Malkoff, Robbie Karen, Hani Massoud, Trina Nadur, Andre Lewis, Mike DiFilippo, Miguel Noguera, and Paul Huckabee, our engineers. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Julie Crosby, Hugh Grant, David Prude, Ariel Boone. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Go to our website for all our coverage of these elections at democracynow.org. Thanks for joining us.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 5:01.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Abrupt Climate Change. I talk with Dr. Guy McPherson Monday, August 8th at 6:30 p.m. at the Waypost in Portland. Dr. Guy McPherson is a professor of conservation biology and an author. He'll present his synthesis of the current peer-reviewed research on Earth's recent phase of rapid warming. Again, that's Abrupt Climate Change. A talk with Dr. Guy McPherson, Monday, August 8th at 6:30 p.m. at the Waypost, 3120 North Williams Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO at the Clinton is our monthly film series at the Clinton Street Theater. The film this month, A Letter from Momo, will play Thursday, August 11th at 7 p.m. A Letter to Momo has been described as a Japanese anime Alice in Wonderland. As is so often the case in Japanese animation, displacement and emotional upheaval lead to interaction with the supernatural. Again, that's A Letter from Momo, Thursday, August 11th, at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, wildfires continue to burn throughout Oregon.
Delegates from Oregon share their experiences from the DNC.
and Bark and Festival de la Salsa join us live in Studio 2 to talk about their upcoming events.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, August 3rd, 2016. I'm Jamani.
And I'm Aaron J. Bernard. The Bybee Creek Fire in Crater Lake National Park continues to grow, with some parts of the park closed to visitors and park staff on alert for evacuation. The weather during the next few days could provide more challenges to Oregon firefighting crews as they work to extinguish a number of wildfires. Winds over 20 miles per hour are expected this week in the Pendleton area, where relative humidity levels could drop to 11%, making the ground and plants more combustible. The National Weather Service has also issued red flag warnings for numerous counties in southeast Oregon. So far, this season's wildfires have burned up nearly 500,000 acres in a dozen states.
In recent weeks, water samples taken from schools in both Portland and Corvallis have come back positive for elevated lead levels. Portland Public Schools became aware that high levels of lead were present as far back as 2012. Superintendent Carol Smith claimed she had no knowledge of the high levels, with no action being taken until additional information was publicly released this June. After the June announcement, an investigation was conducted which concluded that there had been an absence of diligent inquiry on lead safety protocols. Shortly after, Smith announced her resignation. The PPS chief financial officer has become the temporary PPS superintendent. Portland school board members plan to interview candidates for an interim position on August 8th and 9th and will hold a public meet and greet with candidates on August 10th. If all goes according to the board's timeline, an interim superintendent will be announced in mid-August. PPS is planning to provide water dispensers and deliveries of bottled water to ensure access to safety drinking water in every school by the time the regular school year starts August 29th.
Oregon has become a national model in the fight for LGBTQ rights. The state was late to legalize same-sex marriage, but Oregon now boasts the country's first openly bisexual governor, as well as the first openly gay Speaker of the House. It's also the first state to legally allow residents to choose non-binary as a gender. One family even chose Portland as the best place in the nation to raise their transgender daughter. Now Oregon has something else to be proud of. It sent more transgender delegates to the Democratic National Convention than any other state. Of the 27 transgender delegates who attended the DNC, 4 were from Oregon. That's about 15% of the total transgender delegation. That statistic is a remarkable figure, especially considering that less than 2% of the total number of DNC delegates are from Oregon.
The Democratic National Convention is over, and Oregon's 74 delegates have returned home. KBOO had an opportunity to get some impressions from 4 of them. Jenna Yokoyama spoke with Bernie delegate Cole Richardson and Peter Lee. Ray Bodwell spoke with Bernie delegate Nico Serra and Hillary delegate Travis Nelson.
So, Cole, you were at the DNC as a Bernie delegate, correct?
Yes.
So what we all saw on TV was reports of the Oregon Bernie delegates having the lights shut out on them. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Basically, it started, we were chanting no more war. And I guess the Oregon section got a little rowdy. And then all of a sudden, the lights got turned off onto our specific section. So everyone else was sitting in the light except Oregon. We were in the dark. California actually reacted to that by chanting lights, 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 and then shining their phone flashlights at us.
And what were your sort of feelings about the way you guys were being treated?
It was very contentious. A lot of us right off the bat didn't feel welcome. My issues are solely coming from the DNC and not the Democratic Party of Oregon. In fact, the Democratic Party of Oregon was very actually welcoming, and they helped protect us from having some of our signs taken away. So they are actually some rock stars in this.
So you were at the Democratic National Convention last week. Who were you representing?
My name is Pete Lee. I was a pledge delegate for Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, I was surprised when I spoke to another delegate, Oregon delegate, that they were talking about how they weren't free to hold up signs of their choosing.
That is correct. From my understanding, those signs that are in there are pretty much at the convenience of the campaign, in this case, the DNC and Hillary, since she was one with the most pledged delegates and superdelegates as well.
Were you part of the walkout that happened?
I was not.
And why weren't you?
I wasn't part of the walkout for a few reasons. Probably a couple of the main ones were that, honestly, I thought that there was good respect and deference shown to Bernie on Monday, of course, by Bernie supporters, but also folks who preferred Hillary as a candidate for the, Democratic Party. I felt that I didn't need to walk out, that, I knew that if I walked out, I would simply be replaced by some member of the DNC volunteer crew. And I felt that my presence was actually stronger than my absence. I think maybe one of my concerns is that, you know, going forward, as Bernie has mentioned, the revolution continues. And for me, I didn't feel comfortable protesting because I felt to help move Bernie's campaign platform ideas forward that I would need to work with members of the Oregon Hillary delegation. And that, you know, even if I didn't clap or cheer energetically for Hillary Clinton or her surrogates, at least the fact that I showed some respect by simply being present would at least build some amount of rapport to allow me to work with them in the future to help implement aspects of Bernie's very visionary platform, both here at the state level and also the national level.
My name is Nico Serra. I was an at-large delegate for Bernie Sanders to the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia. I think that Bernie Sanders was an enormous success. And I think that for a lot of reasons, especially knowing that, you know, essentially the media, the DNC and the Clinton campaign had their thumb on the scale the entire time. And the fact that Bernie did pull in almost 1,900 delegates, that's really amazing. So I will say I saw the writing on the wall a long time ago. So I would say that I am disappointed, but I would not identify that as my primary emotion right now. Right now, I'm more excited than anything. And the reason is, right now there are several of us within the Oregon delegation that are in direct negotiation with the Clinton campaign. And what we are telling them is we will support you and we will ask our friends to support you if, and then we're giving them a list of things that need to change in order for us to support the Hillary campaign. And, it's really, what's really exciting is that they're listening.
I'm Travis Nelson. I am a Hillary delegate to the National Democratic Convention, and I'm also the chair of the Black Caucus for the Democratic Party of Oregon. I thought that the National Democratic Convention went great. What was phenomenal about the Democrats' convention was that we were a very diverse group. We sent a lot of African Americans, Hispanics, Asians, disabled persons, and LGBT persons to the national convention. And in fact, the Oregon delegation had the largest percentage of its delegation that were LGBT. Our delegation had a very significant Bernie, Sanders delegation. And while we did have our ups and downs as a complete delegation, I felt that by the end of the convention, we all came together to realize that what's most important coming out of this convention is stopping Donald Trump. It was awesome to see the execution of that convention from the DNC. I know there was some controversy as it relates to Debbie Wasserman Schultz, but I thought that the organizers of the convention did an awesome job of reminding America as to who Hillary Clinton is. They did a great job of dispelling this caricature that Republicans have painted of her since she's left the office of the secretary. I think we have the most qualified candidate for president in U.S. history, and I hope that her being a woman isn't held against her in the polling booth. So, again, I'm going to do everything I can to get her elected, We just can't afford to have a candidate like Donald Trump becoming president of the United States. He's extremely divisive. He's been misogynistic. He's proven himself to be racist. I just don't think we can risk or afford to have someone like him in the White House making decisions on behalf of our country.
The conventions have concluded, and the race for president is entering the home stretch. Polls have not yet indicated a clear frontrunner, and with fewer than 100 days until the general election, it remains to be seen which party will do a better job of rallying around their two relatively unpopular candidates.
For many Portlanders, summer means camping. If you're looking for a camping trip that also gives back to the forest, then you might be interested in Bark's Summer Base Camp. With us now live in studio, too, to talk about this is the public campout community organizer, Courtney Ray. Thanks for joining us, Courtney.
Hey, thank you for having me.
So for our listeners who might be unfamiliar with your organization, Courtney, can you tell us a little bit about Bark?
Sure, yeah.
We're having a little trouble with the mic here. Start again?
Hey, I'd be happy to tell you about it.
Okay, why don't you just scoot on over? We'll share the mic. Okay, so for listeners unfamiliar with the organization, why don't you talk to us a little bit about Bark?
Hi, thanks for having me, first of all. Bark is the Portland-based and volunteer-driven watchdog organization working to defend and restore Mount Hood National Forest. Right now, our mission is to restore natural processes and the ecosystem on these public lands, and also to support communities in rallying together for its preservation and restoration. Been around for about 17 years now, so we have a great amount of information about the forest and obviously a lot of respect for it as well.
So that's really quite a long-standing tenure in Portland. You and I were talking before we went on air about the name Bark. I asked you if it was an acronym, and you told me it actually stands for something else. You want to tell the listeners about that?
You know, that's a common question. Bark actually is calling upon kind of a historical member of society, the Barker, who would, you know, reach out to the public and draw attention to something that, you know, we believe is important and that people shouldn't miss. I also have heard folks describing it as, you know, bark is the protective layer of a tree, and in that we are a forest defense organization, that's also pretty appropriate.
Great. Well, Bark is holding a public summer base camp from now until August 15th. So what's summer base camp? Where is it located? What's going to happen there?
Base camp is a free public campout, and it's up in the area of the Upper Clackamas, so the southern part of Mount Hood National Forest. And really, it's Bark's way of helping folks, just people, get out to the forest to learn and experience, you know, this amazing landscape. A lot of us will see that on our commute every day, or maybe we can see it from our office if we're really lucky. We can see it from our backyard. But being out there is definitely the best way to learn about damage that is done by commercial projects like logging and road building. And so we have 4 full weeks of camping planned, and that is to support campers and volunteers to do some hands-on learning and working to protect the forest.
Sounds like a lot of fun. Is this a family-friendly campout, and can anybody attend, or is there a lower upper age limit?
No, absolutely. Open to the public, family-friendly, and that's something that we really stress is important, is that these are public lands. They belong to all of us, and it is also our responsibility as a community to make sure we are informed about what's going on those lands and that we stand up for the things that we believe are the best, you know, serving the people the best and for creating accessibility for everyone. So definitely family-friendly. We even have kid-specific parts of camp and activities planned. We will be doing field work every day. And so if you're up to going out and doing some surveying of timber sales, there's that role for you. If you more prefer to hang around camp and help out with making things run smoothly, we'd love to have you there for those reasons too.
So you touched on this just a second ago, but this campout is about a lot more than just sleeping outdoors. It's also about bringing awareness to the Hunter Integrated Resources Project. So why don't you tell listeners a little bit about that? Give us some background on what it is.
So Hunter is a timber sale. Integrated Resource Project is really a euphemism. among many kind of terms that the Forest Service will use to describe what is at its root the sale of public timber to a private company. And the Hunter timber sale is the latest large proposal in the Clackamas River District. It's over 3,000 acres, generally surrounding Highway 46 from the Big Bottom Wilderness area, including the area around Austin Hot Springs and Bagby Hot Springs, if you're familiar. So there are some parts of this project that we consider kind of taking a step back from where we have been in Oregon and in the West about protecting public lands. This proposal has 260 acres of logging in native forest, which is forest that has never been logged before, and also almost 100 acres of what is termed regeneration harvest, which effectively, with leaving about 15% of trees in a regeneration harvest, that's basically clear cutting that area. And that's something we haven't seen in decades. And so we're very concerned about this project, that it's setting a really bad precedent, letting the Forest Service kind of push against the environmental protections that we've worked very hard for in Oregon. There's also nearly 14 miles of road building in this area. And many folks know that old roads, deteriorating logging roads, are causing severe impacts to the watershed. The upper Clackamas watershed where this project is planned, is over half of it is designated critical habitat for threatened northern spotted owls, which is a species that really means a lot to us regionally and kind of also represents the power of people to step up and take care of public lands. So to see that pushback from our federal agency that's meant to serve the people is really unfortunate. And so we'll be having our camp out to focus on gathering information about that timber sale. And the camp will allow us to make sure that people are nearby, that we can get to, you know, many of the units, and that folks can spend that time together learning about what's going on in the forest.
Okay, great. And we have a couple minutes left. So many things I want to ask you. Can you tell us briefly about ground truthing and how that fits in, and then maybe go on to talk a little bit more about some of the field work and other activities?
Sure. Ground truthing is pretty simple. It's field work from BARC's perspective. We will visit proposed timber sales and then document what we find on the ground in that area. So things like tree size, canopy cover, wildlife, water features, evidence of landslides, just anything that we can identify on the landscape. And then we compare that with the documents from the Forest Service that describe what they believe is going on there and why they're proposing to log there. And we can then determine, you know, inaccuracies based on the actual conditions on the ground. And in the past, our ground truthers, who are all volunteers, have found and documented things like rare plants and animals, and have actually led to cancellation of some timber sales. The Horseshoe Timber Sale near Lolo Pass would be one example of that.
Great. Well, why don't you give listeners once more the dates for the summer base camp and give people an idea of how they can learn more, where they can go online, and also how listeners can support BARC's work in other ways.
So the campout's on right now. Volunteers have been out there for a couple of days. Everything's set up. We have a group kitchen. We'll be able to cook for the entire community for breakfast and dinner. Folks are invited to come and stay as long as they can or want to. It's about 10 miles past the Ripplebrook Ranger Station off Highway 46, and more detailed directions are available on our website. Basically, each day we'll ask folks to go out on ground truthing missions in the Hunter Timber Sale, and then each evening we've a schedule of events that includes a lot of friends and allied organizations that we know. We've invited them to come and speak about their work. So we have a forest-themed theater event one evening. We have a wildlife tracking hike on a different evening. Tomorrow we'll be hearing from a local expert about the history of Bigfoot encounters in the area that our camp is in over the last 100 years. And so we have kind of a variety of people that are interested in the area, and we want to make sure that we share all that information, and we think the forest is a really great place to do that.
Well, that sounds like tons of fun. We're out of time, but thank you, Courtney, for coming in. That was Courtney Ray, community organizer for BARC. To learn more about BARC and their summer base camp that is running right now through August 15th, you can check out their website at www.bark-out.org/basecamp. Thanks.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned for news from the Boo at 5:45, followed by Treasures from the Archives at 6. At 7, it's Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective. Tomorrow's weather will have a low of 53 in Portland, with clear skies and a high tomorrow of 86. East of the Cascades in Hood River, a low of 53 and a high of 89. Today in history, in 1492, Columbus set for sail for the Indies with the Nina, Pinta, and Santa Maria. The quote of the day is from President Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Remember, remember always, that all of us, and you and I especially, are descended from immigrants and revolutionists. Portland never seems to have a shortage of summer music festivals. Adding to the summer music fun is Festival de la Salsa 2016. Coming up this Sunday here in Portland, here to tell us more about it are festival organizers Eric Caravantes and Fernando Rodriguez. Thank you two for coming in.
Thank you. Thank you for having us here.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Tell us about Sunday. What is the festival all about?
Yes. We are putting this event together with the goal to put all the community together to bring some of a flavor of Latino America to here to United States. We put in a couple of bands from different sides of the country. Like we got two major bands from Colombia this year. And our goal is to continue doing every year. But we are kicking this year with these two headliners.
Nice. Where is it taking place?
It's going to be on the East Bank Esplanade under the Hatton Bridge. And the time from 11 a.m. to 11 p.m.
Okay. You have 7 musical acts lined up for Sunday. So you said that 2 of them are from Colombia?
Yeah. The main bands are from Colombia. One of them is Nietzsche, and the other one is Sonora Carruseles. But we also have local bands from Portland. We have Dina de los Rumberos, Salsa Nova. And we also have, like, the event starts at 11 in the morning. We'll have people teaching salsa, bachata,
Zumba.
Zumba. And we also have, like, things for the kids. Like, everyone's welcome, even kids. We want to have activities for them. And we also have, like, professional, you know, dancers in the community. The salsa community in Portland is very, it's really big, and it's just growing every year. So we're expecting to have, like, a lot of instructors that are going to come and do a show, and hopefully we'll have lots of people there.
So someone that completely doesn't know how to salsa dance can come, and then they'll learn, you know, the basic steps.
Yes.
Yeah, there will be somebody. They're going to be having, like, lessons for beginners. So really it's just like it's to have fun. Even if you don't know, you have no experience whatsoever, trust me, you'll just show up there and you'll start moving just when the music
when they
starts
hear
playing.
The music, yeah.
Okay.
And then also we have, like, food from Latino America. We have food from Colombia, food from Mexico, from Guatemala, from different part of the different countries. We have the traditional fresh fruit cups and
tacos,
burritos. So it's going to be it's a family event. So everybody feel welcome there, can come in.
Okay. I heard it's sponsored by the Portland Mercado.
Yeah, we are a small team that we came in from Portland Mercado. We have a business over there. We are 3 partners, Fernando Rodriguez, Eric Caravantes,
and Andres
Perez. Yeah, and then we came in together with this idea to put this event together, and here we are.
Yeah, you know when... So we've been doing business with the Portland Mercado, and we've been doing it for a little over a year. And so when they were talking about, you know what, why don't we do something else for the community? Because we provide now the food. We have all kinds of food from Latin America. And it's no longer a password. It's just Mexican food. Now we have Colombia, like all countries. So we decided, you know what, we already have like this community where we provide food for people, right? Why don't we take the next step? So we thought about, why don't we just bring in music? We have the food now. I think we can bring the music. And we thought about, you know, salsa. Everybody likes salsa. So that's why for Mercado, we didn't know each other. So we started working at Mercado. And I guess now it's just we're partners in this big event for everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah. How long have you two known each other?
Year and a half or as long as Mercado been going.
Too long.
Yeah.
Cool. Your website says that there are activities happening, like extra ones. What are some of those activities?
Some of those activities is like we have paint. They're gonna paint faces for the kids. We're gonna have we call cepillín, or somebody there imitate. It's like imitation from a character from Mexico. So it's going to be over here in Portland too. And then also we have bachata class, Zumba class, and salsa class.
Cool.
Yeah.
How many people do you think are going to attend? Or how many are you anticipating?
We probably between 3,000 to 5,000. So like for sure like 3,000. But we're hoping to get 5,000 hopefully.
Okay. How can our listeners get more info about the festival?
Yeah, it's a website. It's Festival de la Salsa 2016. Festival de la Salsa 2016 PDX. Or they can have direct number is 503-523-9747 for info.
I have a question, too, if I could just jump in. I'm just curious. So some of these bands that came from further afield, you said Colombia, for example. How did you get them to come here? Are these people that are from Colombia that are living in the area, or did you have to entice them here some way?
Yeah. We contact them. So these bands are international, so it's not hard to find them. It's just hard to get them to come here together because it's usually one big band and then you get little ones. But this time we put together like two big ones. So it was a little harder, but they also thought that it was a great opportunity to bring them. And also because they're doing a tour. They're always touring in the country. And so they happen to be like in the country at this time of the year. I think they could be in Canada and then Saturday and they fly to Portland Sunday. So it was a little hard, but... It was good that they decided to stop in Portland.
Yeah, and were they familiar with the city of Portland?
One of them, Grupo Niche, yes, they're coming from Cali, Colombia, and I've been negotiating there since 2009 with the first time they came in here, and from now we get the point that we're ready to do this event. Then how we contacted, and then we contacted the other band, and then try to match the same day and to get in together. Same, you know.
Okay. I wanted to piggyback off the whole bands thing. So, with the band coming from Colombia, I heard because I spoke with one of the organizers of the Mercado, and they were talking about how the Mercado was having an event that was going to have. It was she called them the Beatles of Colombia. Is it that group?
Yeah, it is big. They're big bands. If you probably hear the songs, but you don't know which band it is. But when you look the song and the band, you say, this is the band. So it's that big over there in Colombia. And not only in Colombia, probably in the world. America.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks for speaking with us, guys.
And thank you.
No, yeah. Thank you very
much. Thank you for having us. And we'll hope to see you guys there Sunday.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
That was Eric Caravantes and Fernando Rodriguez from Festival de la Salsa 2016, which is happening this Sunday
East Bank Explanate.
Thank you. From 11 to 10 p.m. For more information, find them online at www.festivaldelasalsapdx.com or 503-523-9747. You can find them on Facebook at Festival de la Salsa in Oregon. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
On a 5-3 vote today, the U.S. Supreme Court put on a hold a lower court's order that a Virginia school district must allow a transgender student to use the boys' restroom at school. The Supreme Court has not yet decided if it will be on rule on the case. A ruling could settle a controversial dispute over schools' legal obligations to accommodate transgender students under Title IX. Justices Ginsburg, Sotomayor, and Kagan, the three women of the court, cast the votes to support the lower court ruling. Nearly half the states have sued the Obama administration over its assertion that the civil rights laws protection against sex discrimination apply to gender identity.
President Barack Obama today cut short the sentences of 214 federal inmates, including 67 life sentences, in the largest batch of commutations on a single day in American history. Almost all the prisoners were serving time for nonviolent drug crimes. So far, Obama has commuted 562 sentences, more than any president since Calvin Coolidge. The difference between a pardon and a commuted sentence is that most of these former prisoners will still be reporting to a corrections officer.
It's Wednesday, which means it's time for another commentary from poet Dan Raphael. With new U.S. bombing in Libya and continued bombing in the Middle East, poetic justice wonders who can bring us peace.
I'm calling on President Obama with a B-O-M-B in the Middle East, Libya, Syria, Afghanistan, Yemen, Iraq, and Iran. Are we bombing any white folks? Russians, at least. U.S. bombs on both sides of the pass in Kashmir. What bombs we don't drop, our allies will. The man who wants Obama's job says he'd rather build a wall than bomb. Track everyone who doesn't look like him, or better yet, don't let them in. He prefers that refugees sink, not swim. His opponent has plenty of experience at squeezing foreign economies until they wince, promoting this coup called TPP so businesses can overrule any government's decree, hiding her role in Honduras with her choice of cane, making sense of her flip-flops could drive me insane. No matter who's the president, our country won't give peace a chance. I'm avoiding the news for a day or three. The only thing I want to get bombed is me. This is Dan Raphael. War is never just. War is never poetic. Make peace now.
And now we hear the latest in worker-related news from our friends at laborradio.org.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham.
We need to embrace our deepest moral values and push for a revival of the heart of our democracy. When I hear Hillary's voices and positions, I hear and I know that she is working to embrace our deepest moral values, and we should embrace her.
The Reverend William Barber. Pro-worker clergy is uniting with workers in social justice struggles. They say that their faith calls them to struggle for justice for workers. Bishop Duane Royster supports the Fight for 15 at Philadelphia's airport. He and fellow clergy have used civil disobedience in the five-year moral struggle for 15 and a union for Philadelphia airport workers.
We all came together and stood with airport workers over the course of the last 5 years, even to the point that on last Thursday, after some workers have been dismissed from their jobs at the airport because of a protest they took place earlier in the week, 10 clergy members of power were arrested by the Philadelphia Police Department because we decided to take over Terminal B at the airport back in Thursday.
Reverend Barber says uniting in solidarity for a more just society is how we revitalize democracy.
When we fight for 15 and a union and universal health care, and public education, and immigrant rights and LGBTQ rights. We are reviving the heart of our democracy.
New Jersey workers want the legislature to pass a bill that would ask voters to approve a constitutional amendment requiring the state to pay for promised and earned pensions. The CWA says the state's pension crisis has become a moral issue. The bill would place a question on November's ballot requiring the state to replenish the pension fund for public workers. U.S. Senator Elizabeth Warren says restoring worker rights to collectively bargain is one of the foundations for building an economy that works for all.
If we are going to build an America that works, not just for those at the top, but that works for all of us, if we are going to build an America that has a better future than today, then we are going to build an America that respects working people and that supports collective bargaining.
Brought to you by Union Active, your certified iOS and Android mobile app developer, offering high-quality, union-made mobile apps backed by a support team which upgrades your product to every new mobile operating system. Features, pricing, and examples are online at unionactive.com.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Dan Raphael, Ray Bodwell, Jamani Ward-Lewis, and Alexia Garcia. The producer is Jenny Yokoyama. Special thanks to Labor Radio. Our engineer is Jenna Yokoyama. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Lisa Loving. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at KBOO News. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM. K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM. And K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Jamani Ward-Lewis.
And I'm Erin J. Bernard. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO. At 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, on Voices from the Edge, talk radio host Joanne Hardesty speaks with Liz Moore, director of the Spokane Peace and Justice Action Works, and Reverend Harriet Walden of Moms for Police Accountability about their upcoming conference called the Northwest Community Coalition for Police Accountability Summer Gathering at Portland State University. At 9, Teresa Mitchell hosts Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know. At 9:30 on Fight the Empire, host Per Fogering speaks with John Michael Greer about his book, Dark Age America, Climate Change, Cultural Collapse, and the Hard Future Ahead. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints with host Dennis Bernstein. At 11 on Between the Covers, host Bethany Grabow talks with John Corey Whaley, author of the new book, Highly Illogical Behavior, the story of a teen with a severe anxiety disorder who hasn't left the house in over 3 years. And at 11:30, hear Black Book Talk, a monthly program featuring interviews and discussions of works by African-American authors. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. Not a current member? You can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate.
We'll be right back.
And now it's time for News from the Boo, the weekly segment from people inside of and around KBOO with news from your community radio station.
Yes, it is that time again. Time for news from the Boo. Our weekly program from the Boo on Wednesdays. We have our program 5:45 p.m. when we hear from folks inside of KBOO about happenings around your independent community radio station. Tonight, we are talking with KBOO board members Delphine Crescenzo and Sequoia Wright about board membership and the upcoming annual meeting and board elections. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, why don't we start by talking about the next membership? When's it coming up?
Yes. Before we talk about the board and what we do, let's actually let everybody know about our fall membership drive, which is going to be starting on the 9th and running about 15 days, unless, of course, we are able to take a day or two off of the drive if enough people are going to donate during the fall sweepstakes. And that's an amazing opportunity for people to donate before the drive starts and enter a chance to get some great gifts as part of that. Some of the gifts, for example, local winery tours from Willackenzie Vineyard and Abbey Creek Vineyard, and also some great gift certificates and a trip to Bucerías, Mexico. So, yeah, and, you know, membership drives really keep KBOO going. It's like 75% of our income that comes from our members. So thank you so much for everyone who is a member.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And